is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
The advice was, you're not a player, so you're at a disadvantage as far as getting into college coaching. Well, the way I saw it is, not being a player, I have way more flexibility with travel and being able to go to different parts of the country to work camps, go to clinics and stuff like that. So I just thought, well, that's one place I have an advantage, so I'm going to do as many of those as possible.
Mason Waters is currently the assistant boys varsity basketball coach at South Forsyth High School in Georgia. Last season, Mason was at NCAA Division II Flagler College as a men's assistant. The year prior, he was a JV boys coach at West Forsyth High School during his senior year of college. Waters started reading John Wooden books when he was 9 and became fascinated by Coach Wooden. He has always wanted to coach. Mason started coaching during his freshman year of college, working with a fifth-grade basketball team. He worked for Kevin Eastman, helping with his clinics, and also volunteered at PGC and USA basketball clinics. Coach Waters has worked at both Snow Valley Basketball School in Iowa and the Jay Billis Skills Camp. Mason was a good high school basketball player, but didn't pursue playing in college because he was ready to coach. Waters shares a lot of free workouts and drills through social media, in addition to his on-court coaching. Thanks for checking out the Hoopheads podcast. Our lineup of podcast guests includes some of the best minds in the game across all levels, from grassroots to the NBA. They'll share insights to help you grow as a coach, improve as a player, or enhance your experience of the game as a parent. You'll gain new perspectives on what the best coaches are doing, how they do it, and why they do it. We hope to make you think and challenge you to consider your approach to the game of basketball. Please subscribe to the Hoopheads Pod and leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show. Help us grow the game by telling your friends and colleagues about the Hoopheads Podcast, so they can give us a listen, too. Get your pen and paper ready as you listen to this episode with Mason Waters from South Forsyth High School in the state of Georgia. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, who is at home taking care of the family. So I am pleased to be joined by Mason Waters, the assistant boys varsity coach at South Forsyth High School in the state of Georgia. Mason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Been a fan of y'all. I haven't listened to every episode, but I've been keeping up from afar and really like what you guys are doing. So well, I'm glad to be on. Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate that. If you've listened to every episode, then you've been pretty busy, because we're cranking them out. We're cranking them out at a pretty high rate. So we have a ton of fun doing it, and so we appreciate that, getting the opportunity to share with our audience, and we're excited to have you on to be able to do that same thing. So let's start out by going back in time to when you were a kid, and talk to me a little bit about how you got into the game when you were younger.
Well, I was a pretty good athlete when I was younger, but I was most gifted in basketball. And I think whenever you're most gifted in something, like, you're going to enjoy it more. So I think that had something to do with me falling in love with basketball super early, as opposed to baseball and football. But being one of the better players, and that's, you know, when you're youth, that's not really saying much, but having a lot of fun, being talented, relatively speaking, kind of made me fall in love with the game. And then I've always been, I think I get it from my mom. She's kind of raised me and my sister, actually, always working two jobs. And so I think growing up watching her being a full-time teacher and then having a full-time business of her own, like all I've known is really work is to work hard. And so from a young age, I remember, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, I'd be the first one to practice during, like when we'd run plays and stuff like that in practice, I'd be on the sideline doing those Pistol Pete Maravich drills and stuff like that. So I think having a natural gift for it when I was young, and then that work ethic that I've always had as well, allowed me to have, you know, a good young playing career. And then when I got to high school, I was a good high school player. I think at best I would have been a Division II player. I had some Division III interest, but I knew I wanted to coach. I knew I wanted to stay close to home, and I knew I didn't want to borrow a lot of money for college. So with those things in mind and the little college opportunities I had, I decided not to play in college or pursue that. And I started coaching youth basketball like fifth grade and middle school pretty much right away when I pretty much on my 18th birthday is when I started coaching. So that's kind of my background and where I'm coming from.
So what was it about coaching that grabbed a hold of you so early that you knew you wanted to coach? Because one of the things that I find to be so interesting is that most coaches that we've had on the podcast fall into one of two categories. They're either somebody like you who knew from the time that almost that they started playing that they eventually wanted to coach.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who go through and they're a player and they have this whole playing career, this whole part of them with basketball. And at no point in time do they ever really think about, hey, I'm going to coach when I'm all done. And then suddenly they get done and either they look around or they realize, well, I'm going to miss the game if I don't do something within the game of basketball. So let me become a coach. Or they just happen to fall into an opportunity to become a coach. And then they fall in love with it subsequently after having been given that opportunity. So I'm always curious about what was it that drove you as a young kid to think, boy, someday I really want to coach? Do you remember what it was that fascinated you with coaching from a young age?
Yeah, looking back on it, I'm able to realize it's one of those things when you're little, you don't know what was happening. But as an adult, I think I've been able to piece some things together. But I didn't really have a good relationship with my dad growing up. My parents got divorced and he left. There was a time period, maybe a year or so, where I didn't talk to him at all. And when I was little, I realized that you know, when you're a young boy or even young girls, like you just have that desire for a fatherly figure. And maybe for a year or two there, maybe a little bit longer than that, I was kind of missing that from my dad. Thankfully, we're close now and have a good relationship nowadays. But there was something with that psychology of looking for a fatherly kind of figure. And that ties in with my faith too, but it also ties in with the coaches I had growing up as a kid. Like they were the ones I really gravitated to because I was looking for that kind of that masculine reassurance and just that fatherly figure, like I said. So I looked up to my coaches and admired them so much for what they were doing for me on the field, on the court, whatever sport I was playing. And just that natural gravitation towards them was like, I really like these men in my life, these coaches. They're helping me out a lot. I'm really loving the sport I'm playing. I think it'd be cool to be like them one day. And then when I was like 8 or 9 years old, I think my grandma got me a John Wooden book because she knew I loved basketball. She knew I loved, had an interest just in sports in general. And she got me that book. It was the small one. I think it's just called Wooden.
Yeah.
All his books have just Wooden something on it. But anyway, I read that and I was fascinated by John Wooden. And then since I was, you know, 9, 10 years old, all I've ever wanted to do really was coach.
All right. So two things from that. I'm going to come back to the Wooden question.
Okay.
First question is related to what you talked about in terms of that mentorship role and needing those father figures in your life.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it was that piece of it, which I think goes to the relationships that you as a coach can build with your players more so than the X's and O's piece of it. Because I think most, when we think of, again, as kids, and I know you're looking back on this as an adult, but when you think of kids who are fascinated by the game, they tend to be fascinated more with the ability to play and the skill development that goes along with that, or the X's and O's and trying to figure out in that competitive nature. Whereas you were looking at it more from that relationship standpoint, which is what we've heard from coaches on the podcast, and I know it to be true myself, is that the relationship piece of building that relationship with players is so critical. And it seems like even though you may not have been consciously aware of that when you were 8, 9, 10 years old, that that was something that you were gravitating towards as opposed to maybe necessarily the X's and O's at that point.
Yeah, and I think it was a little bit of the X's and O's too, because I do remember when I was like 8 or 9 around that same age, and I went to a sports store and I wanted to get a whiteboard to draw up some plays. But then I remember the store lady was like, "This is for coaches, not for kids." And I was not assertive enough at that age to say, "No, I really want this." But so I did have an interest in that. But yeah, it was those relationships mainly, and just kind of the need. You know, when I first started coaching, I'm like, I thought I had some control over who we influence, or sorry, I thought we had control over the lives that we change. Like, you know, if we want to change a kid's life, we can do it. Well, there's a lot of kids, like, just the circumstances that we can't control. Maybe they have a healthy home life and everything's good, and they're not looking for a coach to really change their life. They just want a little bit of coaching. So, you know, I think as coaches, it's just, we just got to do our best job and understand. And this is a lesson I've had to learn, and I know older coaches learn this as they go on. Some kids you'll reach, and some kids you won't reach, but our job is to just do our best, model good behaviors and things like that, be a good man, good woman overall. And then whichever kid is in that situation in life where they need that, even if they don't verbally express it, maybe like how I was, you know, when they look back, hopefully they can say, that coach made a big difference in my life. And then also what else kind of added fuel to my perspective on coaching was I went on a mission trip in Uganda, Africa, East Africa in 2014. I was over there for 10 weeks, 10 and a half weeks. And first of all, it was miserable being in it. And it really sucked. It really did. It was just very, very difficult being over there in a completely different country. But amazing experience. I'm glad I went through it. And I worked with this organization called Champions United. And they are an organization that it's kind of like maybe like Upward Basketball in the States, but gotcha. They basically hire on these young adult men, so early 20s, mid 20s, sometimes early 30s, well, even older than that. But in Uganda, half the population, I don't know what the stats are now, this was a couple years ago, but half the population was under the age of 12. So every other person is a kid or a baby because, you know, the life expectancy isn't as long. Anyway, what Champions United does is they get soccer coaches, and their whole organization exists to put these soccer coaches in different communities where these young boys and young girls, their father died or left or whatever, and they go into these communities and they just mentor these kids, help them with education, food, and just even give them structure in life with like having to go to practice, having to be responsible for a jersey and things like that. And being, I don't know if how many listeners have been over to Africa or some part of the world where the standard of living is a lot lower than what it is over here. But that experience and being in places like that just changes people, changed me in ways I can't express unless I talk for 2 or 3 hours on it. But that also had a big, profound impact on kind of my perspective of coaching as well.
All right. So give us maybe one or two things that for somebody who hasn't experienced that, to better help them understand what the day-to-day living conditions were like while you were there.
Well, we were lucky compared to the village we were in, because who built that organization are Americans, and they're actually from Georgia. They're business guys, so they do well, but they're great guys. They wanted to start this organization in Uganda. So we lived in a nice place with running water and electricity, but it was just me and another friend over there for most of the summer. And we really didn't have a schedule or a rhythm. We kind of just woke up and figured out what we could do that day. But where we were, even though we had electricity, like there were scheduled power outings. So I can't remember the exact rhythm, but it's like every 3 days for 4 hours at any given random time during the day, the electricity completely goes out. I think they did it to conserve power bills or something in the area. But the neighbors, they had to, so they would pump water in those yellow jerry cans is what they're called. And some kids, because some kids wouldn't have the money to go to school. And so these families, they pump water, and thank God they have clean water, because some villages don't out there. But they'd pump the water, and then maybe an hour or two a day, they'd spend pumping water into these jerry cans that sometimes weigh, some were 15, some were 20, some were like 40 pounds. But that would be cooking water, cleaning water, drinking water, whatever they needed. You know, water-wise, that's where they got it. So that was a key thing. And then also, like snapping chickens' heads off and stuff. Obviously, there's no Zaxby's or Chick-fil-A out there. There was a There was some restaurants, but not where we were. But anyway, I'd say the water was kind of the main thing. And then another big event that I experienced over there, we went across the street and we talked to one of the people who were living in that village, and they spoke very, very little English, because in Uganda the official language is English, but most, if you're outside the city, you're speaking some of the tribal languages. But we just said, hey, is there anything we can help, you know, pray for or whatever, anything you need, anything we can do? And they said, yeah, we need, you know, X amount of shillings, which is their currency, to send our kids to school next year. Well, we couldn't do the math of the shillings to American dollar conversion, and we said, okay, so you need, I can't remember how many it was, 2,500 shillings was like a dollar. So, right. But anyway, we come back and we call the bosses pretty much. We're like, hey, these people across the street want money for school. Can we give them some? And we were warned not to give money, because once you start giving out money, it just kind of screws up the ability to help those communities. And they said, how many shillings were they asking for? And we told them, and then they said, okay, so they want 40 bucks. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, they want $40 to send their kids to school for a whole year, and they can't afford that. Meanwhile, in 1 week, I'll spend 40 bucks at Chick-fil-A. So that, in that one moment, that event has stuck with me ever since and been one of the most powerful in my life. So that, I could keep going on and on and on and on. I like talking about that stuff more than basketball sometimes.
That's very cool. I think what I hear you saying there is something that is, again, a theme that you hear out there frequently, and it's something that it's probably more prevalent or more at least talked about now, especially in the athletics, than it used to be, is that attitude of gratitude and being thankful for what you have. And when you hear a story of somebody who needs $40 to send their kid to school for an entire year, you hear about people who have to spend an hour or two every single day pumping water and then carrying it to wherever they need that water to be.
Yeah.
And then we just flip on the faucet and get exactly what we need. It definitely, I think, puts things into perspective for you. And I think that that's something too, if we tie it back into coaching, obviously we want our players to have that attitude of gratitude. And I think it also helps us sometimes as coaches, it's easy to lose our perspective about what's important. And I know that every coach is competitive. Every coach likes to win. And yet sometimes we can all get really, really caught up in how important those wins and losses are. And sometimes we forget what our true mission is, which is what you've kind of talked about here off the top, which is relationships and trying to have an impact on people, whether it's people in Uganda that you're helping on a mission trip, or whether it's some players from your high school team that need your help because their parents are getting divorced or because they're going through some other type of tough situation in their life. So I think that those two themes, even though they weren't directly related to coaching, I think that obviously it's clear that that trip had a huge impact on you and that it's going to continue to impact you throughout your entire coaching career. I would imagine you're going to carry those memories with you forever.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. And the impact that occurs whenever you go, whenever someone's fortunate enough, and I'm sure a lot of people listening have been on trips like that, whether it's domestic or international, but the impact that you get from those is indescribable, and it's hard to remain the same after that. Once I got back from that trip, I went to University of North Georgia, and we had like how many dudes? We had 7 guys living in a, you know, 4-bedroom house or whatever, typical college situation. And I got the worst room. Like, it didn't have a window. It used to be a big closet, and all my friends, and this was after I got back from Africa, and everybody's like, dude, are you serious? You're living in there? How are you? And all I could think about was, I'm like, are you kidding me, man? If you just go to Uganda or some other, and some even cities in America like that, you go to a place like that, and it'll give you good perspective that hopefully you keep for your whole life.
Yeah, it's true. And again, it's easy sometimes to lose that perspective when something happens in your life, and but it's important to remain grounded. And I think that that's something that you're always going to be able to carry with you and recall at times where if things seem like, oh, maybe I am complaining a little bit too much, or maybe I'm thinking things are a little bit tough. And you can always go back to that and say, you know, I ended up having it pretty good. And I think it's also a story that you can share. You can share with your players. You know, I think they can relate to that same thing in that, you know, hey, yeah, maybe you didn't play as many minutes as you wanted tonight, or maybe this was a really tough practice, but look, here's some things that people go through in their real life that can have an impact. And I think that it's going to be, as I said, something that you're going to carry with you for the remainder of your entire life and your remainder of your entire coaching career. Let's shift back from your trip. Let's shift back to Coach John Wooden. Give me an idea of what it was that you thought, what impacted you when you first started reading about Coach Wooden and learning about him? What were a couple things that maybe stood out that made you really think, boy, this is the guy I can look up to in the coaching profession?
Just his principles that were, and everybody who talks about Coach Wooden talks about this, that his principles weren't about basketball, they were about life. I remember one of the chapters, a bunch of those, the book is just a bunch of quick hitters, the book that I have, I know some of them have longer chapters, but talking about how his dad was so gentle with their mules on their farm. I remember that story where I think Coach Wooden was kind of talking about people would just beat mules to get them to move and get them to work, but his dad was really gentle with the mules, and he had this ability with the mules to just kind of look at those animals or and say something really softly, and then the mules would know, and then they'd get to work. And then I remember, and then the quote to kind of close out that story in his book was, even somebody as, or even something like being as stubborn as a mule will still respond to gentleness. And that always stuck out to me. This is neither right nor wrong. It's just kind of my style, and maybe it is wrong in some ways, but ever since I read that, I don't ever yell at players. Maybe I should sometimes. Some of the older coaches I've been mentored by were like, dude, you got to be more aggressive. Probably should. But I also think that if we as coaches can communicate on an emotional and trust level, like a very deep level, I think the screaming and all that is superficial. And I think this is kind of a risk saying this, but I think if you've got to yell, maybe it could be the player's not coachable, but if you got to yell your head off and curse a kid up and down, then well, maybe they don't listen to you in the first place. Because I think if players have respect for us as coaches, we can be gentle and just straightforward without having to cuss them up and down and everything like that. But anyway, and then another thing in that book, something like don't compare, or is like, is my Chevy better than their Ford? And basically the story is, or the analogy is, everybody's got different gifts and our job is to just make the most out of them. And then there's a lot more in there, but what's cool too is I worked for Chad Warner at Flagler College last year, and I kind of say this to make myself feel good, but I almost feel like a great grandson of Coach Wooden, because Coach Warner at Flagler was a graduate assistant for Jim Herrick at Georgia, and Jim Herrick was an assistant coach for John Wooden. So in some ways I like to tell myself I'm part of that tree. It's probably an overestimation or hyperbole, but it makes me feel good about it, about myself.
Well, I think when you take those principles and those things that John Wooden talked about and espoused both in his books and in his daily life and his practices and games and just the way he went about his business, when you take those things and you incorporate them into what you do, you're going to have a hard time going wrong with using Coach Wooden as a role model, certainly. And I think one of the things that caught my attention when you were talking was you talked about how you don't feel the need to yell at players. And when I'm coaching, I tend to be the same type of coach, I think, that you're describing, in that I very rarely, if ever, am I going to yell at a player. I'm more trying to communicate with them. And I think that if you look back on the history of coaching, there's clearly been a shift away from that old fire and brimstone, Bob Knight, that type of coach who was much more prevalent. Not that there aren't still some that are around today, because there are. But that type of coach was much more prevalent 20 or 30 years ago. And I think now we're starting to see more of that shift towards positive coaching and relationship building and communication and all the things that you described. And I think it's important for coaches to understand that you have to be yourself. Now, yourself doesn't mean that you're screaming and swearing at people and you say, oh, that's just who I am.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are some coaches who do far, far better with being able to raise their voice and get their message across in certain ways. And then there are other coaches who can be much more soft-spoken and get their message across in those ways. And I think it speaks to the fact that you have to do what you feel comfortable. And if, let's say you, for example, you got advice from a coach that said, hey, you got to start yelling at kids. You got to start being a little bit louder. You got to be more aggressive, as you talked about. Well, if you started to do that, I'm guessing that you'd probably end up having less success communicating because it just wouldn't be you. And conversely, I think if you ask the coach who tends to raise their voice to just be completely on one level and communicate in a different way, they would have trouble. I think you have to be who you are. That, again, goes to you got to treat kids respectfully. We're not talking about yelling in terms of swearing at kids and that kind of thing. Yeah. But we are just talking about there's different styles of coaching. And I think you have to coach to whatever your style is. And once you find it, then that's when you can really have success. And it basically comes down to me, is how do you communicate your message to your players, and how do you demonstrate to them that you care about them as more than just basketball players? And if you can do those two things, then I think there are different ways and styles that you can get to the same result, which is a positive impact both as a basketball player and a positive impact on the player as a human being as well.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the J. Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the J. Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the J. Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
At Snow Valley Camps, which I've been fortunate to work twice, I think. But anyway, they just emphasize, like, Coach Showalter, Slawball, Tate Slock, all the leaders of that camp, they emphasize being a teacher of the game, a teacher, a teacher, a teacher. And that's what John Wooden said also. So I like that as kind of a guiding philosophy of just teach basketball, just like you teach math, teach history, teach basketball. And it's Snow Valley, and I know we're going to talk about Snow Valley anyway, but that's their big emphasis, is focus on the fundamentals, focus on the details, be clear in your communication, be precise. Coach Showalter, he always says coach in sound bites, which that's always stuck with me as well. But yeah, Snow Valley, I love that experience because it was, they talk about teaching the game.
All right, so let's jump right into that. How did you get connected, first of all, to Snow Valley? Explain that, and then we can kind of jump into your experiences and compare them to the experiences that I had this year with when Jason and I had an opportunity to go and work out there in Iowa this summer.
Yeah, I met Coach Show, and this is, I like helping younger coaches who were in my shoes, like if they're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they want to get into college coaching, because I was in those shoes, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So hopefully this advice will be good for the young coaches like that, because I promised I'd never forget what it felt like to want to have that goal, and I was eventually able to achieve it. But anyway, tying that into how I got into Snow Valley was I went to a USA basketball clinic in Atlanta, and I went to a Coaching U clinic in Orlando when I was like 19, 20. I went to every clinic I possibly could, and I couldn't afford them all. So what I would do is I'd just email and say, hey, can I volunteer to work the clinic? You know, I'll set up posters, I'll work the door, whatever. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But getting
it's always
into,
worth a shot, right?
Yeah, it is. And a couple times it did work, and then you get to meet people, which is good, and network. But I can't remember the order. It was Coaching U or USA Basketball Clinic. Or no, I think it was a PGC. Anyway, somehow I saw Coach Showalter at 2 or 3 clinics within a couple months. And after I saw him for the second or third time, I said, hey, during the break, you want to grab lunch? And he's very gracious and very humble guy. And he said, yeah, of course. So we grabbed lunch, and I'm just super young, and the questions I asked were probably as stupid as can be, but he's so nice. But I think after that lunch, he was like, hey, you know, we'd love to have you at Snow Valley. I've noticed you've been at a couple clinics that I've been speaking at, and you've come and said hello. And even though I asked him probably stupid, immature questions, but he said, we'd love to have you on at Snow Valley, and I took it up.
Yeah, we had an opportunity to have Coach Showalter on the podcast, and we had been introduced to him through Coach Eric Flannery, who's here in Cleveland at St. Edward High School. And
yeah,
Coach Showalter came on the podcast without knowing me from the next guy and spent whatever, an hour, hour and a half with us. And then later I got a chance to meet him in person at the Jay Billis Skills Camp last June. And as we were coming down and going to Jay's house on that first night, Coach Showalter is standing in line to get his taco at the little makeshift taco stand. And so I walked up and said hello because we had never met in person. And then he and I ended up sitting down at the table and talking and having dinner, just sort of similar to your experience. And I'm sure there were a lot of other people that would have liked to have had the opportunity to sit down with him. And he was gracious enough to sit down with me and a few other people who were at the table. But nonetheless, just a fantastic guy. And through being able mm-hmm. to build that relationship with him, then we were able to have the opportunity to go out and work at Snow Valley. And it was just, as you described it, it's like basketball nirvana, both for coaches and I think for players. There's no better place than that to be able to learn the game. And when I say learn the game, I don't just mean as a player. I mean, as a coach, you go and you're around some of the best coaches in the game who are really, again, there to teach. They're there to share what they've learned. They're there to make the game better. And there's no better place if you're a coach and you have an opportunity to go, or you're a player and you have an opportunity to go. I can't recommend it enough. It's very cool that your story of just kind of volunteering and putting yourself out there, and then boom, all of a sudden you meet somebody and they recognize that you've been working hard and that you're trying to learn your craft. And before you know it, there you are in Iowa working at Snow Valley.
Yeah, absolutely. And Coach Show, Coach Slawbaugh, Matt King, Greg White, all those guys there. And what I've learned about Snow Valley is like, you don't have to be a big-time NBA name or like big-time Hall of Famer that the whole world knows to be a great basketball coach. The coaches there are just regular high school coaches like me and you who love the game, who love coaching, and who are so generous in helping players but also helping younger coaches. And the setup of the camp is amazing too. How many clinics there are, how they cover every facet of the game, how detailed it is, how organized it is. It is, I think it's the best thing in basketball, really.
It's truly a family.
I really do, yeah. Yeah, that's true too.
It's truly a family. I feel like just from doing the podcast, and then when we were out there, I think we had five coaches that had already been on the show with us before we went out there. And then subsequently, we've had a few more that we met while we were there. And I'm sure we're going to continue to have more, and we're planning to go back out to Iowa this coming July. But it's just amazing how, and this is one of the things that we found through the podcast, is how willing coaches are to share what they know and how willing they are to give of their time, both to the players who are at the camp or their players on their team, and how willing they are to share with their fellow coaches. And I think that's one of the things that is so refreshing about the coaching fraternity. And I think you see that more. I think the internet has made it easier for people to feel connected. And I also think it's made it harder for people to hide the things that they're doing, not in a bad way, but just, I think even if you wanted to keep your offense secret, or you wanted to have this out of bounds play that nobody else could have, with the way that things are shared today, there's no way that even if you wanted to keep that stuff secret that you can. And so I think what's happened is that the coaching fraternity has become just this basically wide open book where everybody is willing to share. And we just have met so many great people through the podcast and Snow Valley and Jay Billis Skills Camp. And just, it's amazing the quality of human beings that we have as coaches in the game of basketball. And I'm sure you saw that when you were at Snow Valley.
Yeah, and they're willing to share. Well, coaches in general, especially in basketball, I feel like, not only are they willing to share, but they're willing to learn from anybody too. Like, I'll send out those free workouts and just drills and things like that through Twitter, and I'll get coaches who would out-coach me every single day of the week. Even like on LinkedIn, I'll share workouts. There'll be pro coaches and I'll send them stuff and they're like, oh man, this is awesome. Thanks for sharing. And I'll say, you've got 25 more years of experience than me. I have zero wins. I've never won a game as a head coach, you know, never developed an NBA, nothing like that. And even coaches are like, hey, this is so awesome. Thanks for sharing. And I'm like, I was just throwing it at you. Hopefully you find something good, but I appreciate the humility that a lot of these way better coaches, I mean, really way better coaches than me, have been receiving some of the stuff.
I think that's so true in that when you put stuff out there and you're willing to share it with others, I think that everybody knows that, you know, none of us that are out here coaching basketball, nobody's reinventing the wheel on a daily mm-hmm. basis. Everybody's just doing their thing. And so when you have coaches that are willing to share, sometimes you just need to pick up a little bit of different terminology or maybe just a different spin on something that you've always done. I think sometimes when you look at it with a fresh eye or you just see something that somebody else is doing, you're like, yeah, I've done something like that, but wow, I really like that small little tweak that's going to make it that much better or that much more fun or that much more challenging for my players. And I think that's something that coaches really do appreciate because sometimes we get stuck in our ways of doing things. And I know that that's something that I was guilty of as a young coach. I'm almost 50. So when I'm talking about me being a young coach, my first coaching job was as a JV head coach back when I was about 25 years old. So we're talking, this is 25 years ago, pre-internet. And I look back, at that time.
No, that was when hashtag meant pound.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And so, yeah, totally different era. But I think about that and I basically, when I became a coach, the only thing that I knew was the coaches that I had played for. Mm-hmm. So everything I did was just a compilation of what my high school coach did, what my college coach did. I probably didn't even remember anything that my seventh or eighth grade coach did. So I was basically drawing my knowledge from two guys. And you think about that compared to the amount of information that we have at our fingertips today. Both in terms of, and now I could have been going to clinics and other things. And that's one of the regrets I probably have is that I should have been doing a better job like you did of networking and volunteering and doing those kinds of things. But I didn't do that at the time. And there just wasn't the opportunity to be able to find all this great information. I look at it and I go, boy, I wasn't a very good coach back then because I was only just mimicking what I had seen other coaches do. And I think now you have such a great opportunity to pull from so many different places and so many different great minds in the game that you can always pick up things. And I say this all the time. When I was 25 as a coach, I probably thought I knew everything. I was a former Division I player. I really didn't need anybody to tell me how to coach the game of basketball because I thought I knew it all. And now I've been doing this for 25 years at various levels and to varying degrees of success. And I realized that I don't know nearly anything. When I go and I watch some of these guys, as you said, at Snow Valley, and they put on their clinics and they're doing drills. And I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. And I'm going back to my dorm room and writing down notes and trying to pick up things that I can take back to work with the players that I work with or the teams that I coach. And that's what basketball to me is all about.
Yeah. Who's your favorite to learn from?
Whew, man, that's a good one. You know what? When I was there, I picked up some really great drills from Nick Legalbo, who coaches at Lane Tech in Chicago. I don't know if Nick was there at all when you were there.
Nick's He's a good man.
Very good. Great guy. I had an opportunity. We met up actually in Chicago last year during the Junior NBA leadership conference there that I've gone to for a couple of years. And since Nick's in Chicago, he came down and we were able to connect there in person. And then obviously we connected out in Iowa. But Nick just did a great job with the clinics that he was putting on. And of course, you know, at Snow Valley, you get a chance to, you're kind of with your, you know, you're with your league. So you don't always get to see the people who are in the other two different leagues. You're not necessarily seeing their clinics. So I really enjoyed learning from Nick right there in person. And also Greg White, who's been on our podcast a number of times. Greg did some great clinics there that I really enjoyed. And both of those guys are tremendously successful high school coaches and not only successful wins and losses, but they're two guys who do things the right way. And to anybody who's out there who's listening, if you get an opportunity and you're a high school coach and you want to connect with two people who know the lay of the land and know how to do things the right way, Greg and Nick are both tremendous resources and they do a great job. So those two guys that stand out for me at Snow Valley that I love to be able to learn from. And I took some of their drills and I'm using them today with the teams that I coach here and, you know, here in Cleveland with mostly my kids is who I'm coaching now. So,
So
it motivates me even more. I'm even more motivated to build those relationships like we talked about, because it's with my own kids in many cases. So,
yeah. And Greg White's the best Twitter follow, the best coaching Twitter follow.
Absolutely.
I would say. Yeah.
Greg always has. Let's put it this way. If there's a hot button topic, Greg will find that hot button topic and he will share. And he always is good for finding the crazy, goofy clown drills that are out there. So
yeah, that's right.
I know he's really good at finding those.
That's right.
He and I have been good. Again, he's one of the driving forces actually behind the podcast. And I've shared this story before, but it's probably worth repeating now that we've talked a little bit about
Greg.
Oh,
yeah, I've heard this, yeah.
So the origins of the podcast, I kind of had it on my bucket list for a while that we wanted to get it started. And at various times, I put it on my to-do list and then I'd look at it and I'd be like, I'm not sure how I'm going to do that. And I'd try to get it started. One time I started doing it, just me talking about basketball by myself. That was pretty boring. It was pretty boring for me. And I'm sure it would have been pretty boring for people to listen to. And so I kept looking around. All right, how can I have a co-host? And so I ended up hooking up with Jason, who had worked at my camps when he was younger. He's about 15 years younger than me. And so he had gone to my camps when he was younger. And then he and I later became friends and he worked for me. And so we decided that we were going to start the show. And originally it was going to be a podcast about sports parenting, basketball parenting, how to be a better basketball parent. We were just going to touch on different topics. So we actually recorded like 14 or 15 episodes that are at the very beginning of our podcast feed. So if you do have any interest in those, you can go back and listen to them.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good. But what ended up happening is that we always had in the back of our mind that we wanted to start doing some interviews, and we thought we would probably start with Cleveland area high school basketball coaches. But as we were getting started, we didn't quite have the technology mastered. So we were like, we got to learn how to use the tech before we can start doing interviews, because we didn't know if we'd be able to get these people in person. So we had to figure out how are we going to record remotely. And so we slowly started to try to figure that out. And then I got connected to Alan Stein through a connection with a mutual friend, and Alan ended up being our first interview. And he ended up also bringing with him on that first interview Babe Kwasniak, who coaches at Villa Angela St. Joseph High School here in Cleveland. So we did those two interviews. And then the very next week, I ended up going to a USA basketball clinic here in Cleveland. And at that clinic, I heard Greg White speak. And when his speech was over, and he walked down off the stage. I walked over, and I never would have done this had I not had the podcast. Mm-hmm. I walked over to Greg and I said, "Hey, I really loved what you had to say. I thought your speech was spot on. Would you be willing to come on the podcast and talk a little bit about some of the things that you talked about here today to the coaches?" And he said, "Sure." And so we ended up having Greg on about, I don't know, a week or a week and a half later when he got home. And then from there, he opened up his network. Alan Stein opened up his network. And through my own personal network, it just went from being a sports parenting show to being an interview show. And we've never looked back. And that's just kind of the way it's went. So Greg and Alan especially have been instrumental in the growth of the podcast and getting us connected to a lot of great people who have then just the network effect continued to connect us to even more great people and allowed us to spread and be able to reach out to lots and lots of different people. And that's the genesis of the podcast. So big thanks to Alan and Greg, which I've told them many times, speaking of that attitude of gratitude that we talked about a little bit earlier, for sure.
Yeah, I've listened to that Pierce. I know that Alan doesn't do it anymore, but that Pierce Sweat stuff he had going was good.
For sure. Yeah, he was great. I mean, he was probably the first basketball podcast that I probably listened to was him and Adam Bradley on the Hardwood Hustle.
Oh, that's right.
Which is another great one. If you don't listen to that, you definitely want to get that in your rotation for anybody out there. They do a tremendous job. Now it's Adam Bradley and TJ Rosine, who TJ's been on with us as well. And they do a great job. And that's what I remember I tell my son all the time. He's in eighth grade now. But when he was in probably fourth or fifth grade, we would be driving to AAU tournaments together. And we'd throw that Hardwood Hustle on and we'd listen to Alan and Adam and be talking and whatever. And then a year or two later when I got to know Alan and then we had Alan on the show, and you know, it's kind of like for my son, even for me to a certain degree, when you listen to a podcast, you sort of feel like you know the person.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
they're talking about themselves and they're telling you about their family or about this or that and whatever. And so for my son, especially when I got to then actually know Alan, and my dad and my son would be like, "Dad, you're talking to Alan," you know, because it was almost like, you know, again, he was a celebrity in our car on these rides to AAU tournaments. So kind of cool. Again, I never would have guessed that the people that we've been able to have on the show, I never would have guessed that we'd been able to get the tremendous quality of guests that we've been able to get to. And I think I owe a lot of that to the people who were on the show early and then helped connect us to lots of other people. So it's been great. And you can see just the Snow Valley family that you're a part of. If I just went with all the people that we've been able to get to know through Snow Valley, that probably covers like a third of the podcast of the people that have been on who are in some way, shape, or form connected to Coach Showalter and connected to Snow Valley basketball. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your career goals as a coach. So when you start out your freshman year of college, you're coaching a bunch of fifth graders. What do you have in the back of your mind that you want to do? Where do you want to get to? It sounds like maybe at first you thought, hey, I want to go into college coaching. So talk a little bit about where your goals were initially, and then let's kind of work through some of the stops you've had in your coaching career.
Yeah, goals were college coaching for sure. And in the back of my mind, I don't know, I got some, like, trying out some different business things right now, but I think long-term I'd still love to coach college. I loved coaching college. So, but when I was 18, that was the goal. But I just wanted to get as much coaching experience as possible, to network as possible, to work as many camps and clinics as possible. The advice was, you know, you're not a player, so you're at a disadvantage as far as getting into college coaching. Well, the way I saw it is, not being a player, I have way more flexibility with travel and being able to go to different parts of the country to work camps, go to clinics and stuff like that. So I just thought, well, that's one place I have an advantage. So I'm going to do as many of those as possible. So yeah, just doing like middle school and youth basketball when I was like 18, 19, my first 2 years of college. But also I went to John Lucas camp, Duke camp during the summer, Phenom Hoop Report, and a lot of others. I was just trying to get as much experience and get as much networking in as possible to help me get that goal to coach in college. And the way what I really had learned now, I knew it back then, but I know it's 100% true now. Networking now is not really, if you can get to know a quote unquote big name person, maybe an NBA coach, yeah, that's great. But people who are in the business already, the name for outsiders or people who are just getting started, like when I was younger, a big name seems really, really powerful. And sometimes it is. But once you get into it, you may see that there is someone who's not famous, who I don't want to say nobody, but kind of a nobody that nobody knows of. But behind the scenes, they've got connections with every single college possible. So that was another benefit, running into some good people like that. But as I progressed, just working all those camps, buying as many coaching videos, books as I possibly could, getting all of those, watching a lot of the Coaching You stuff with Kevin Eastman and Brennan Sir and all they did. I don't think I have every DVD that they've ever put out, but I'm close. I know close. That. Yeah. I remember, like in college, I remember we were in there Friday night, and some girls came by the dorm. They're, hey, y'all come hang out with us, cute girls. And I was like, I'm going to stay back and watch some Coaching You stuff. And so I do that and take all those notes on whatever it was of the certain video. But I just knew I could work as many camps and clinics as possible, and that's kind of what I did. And so my senior year of college, I was a JV coach where I went to high school, West Forsyth High School, and worked for Frederick Hurt. And then that following summer, what really helped me and got me the best connection was Jay Billis Camp. And Jay Billis Camp is also amazing. I say Snow Valley is amazing they really, really focus on helping you teach the game. Jay Billis Camp does that as well. They're very, very detailed, and you'll, like young coaches like myself, when they leave that camp, much better teachers of the game. And Billis Camp also is, they have the desire and the want to grow and develop and connect the next generation of college coaches. So they're very, very intentional about that. And I got connected with John Shulman and John Searby and Jay Billis and all them, and they put in some good words for me at different colleges after working their camp. Some colleges I wasn't interested in going to, like all the way across the country, but there were what happened eventually was Chad Warner, who was he was my boss last year at Flagler, but I was meeting with John Shulman one day during the summer, and Shulman got a phone call. We're in Chattanooga. Coach Warner says, "Hey, my assistant just left. I know you're connected with a lot of young coaches. Do you have anybody?" And I just happened to be right there eating breakfast with Shulman.
That's awesome.
And he says, "Yeah," and he said something like, "I'm sitting with him right now." And then he keeps talking, hangs up the phone, and he says, "I think I just got you an assistant job at Flagler College." And then I went on to Flagler, spent a year there. So
that's awesome. First, yeah. So before we jump to that, Shulman's awesome.
Yeah, he's funny.
He's a great guy. The first time I talked to him, and again, I got connected to him through Alan Stein, connected me to Shulman and to John Searby, and that's how I got the opportunity to work with the Billis camp last year. And then we're going to do that middle school camp up here in Cleveland this year. So we're super excited about that. But the first conversation I had with Shulman, we were talking for probably, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. And he just stops and he goes, "Hey, man, you're one of us." And I just started laughing. I'm like, okay, we had like a 5 or 10 minute conversation. And already I felt like he and I were old friends.
That's how he is, yeah.
And he's been... just like he was supportive of you in that moment, he's been super supportive of us. I think we've done 15 roundtable episodes, and he's been in on every single one, despite the fact that he's coaching at the Division II level back as a head coach.
Yep.
And it's just amazing that a guy who has had the amount of success that he's had has been so supportive of what we're trying to do here with the podcast. So I'm not at all surprised that he was a driving force behind helping you to – to get that job.
Hey, Hoopheads Nation, check out this new offering from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Scott Drew Baylor Defensive Playbook by Farshad Alemi is now available. Baylor allows 0.75 points per play, the best mark in the country according to Synergy Sports. Visit tylerwhitcomb.com to check out this great resource for improving your team's defense.
So then let's go to Flagler. Talk to me a little bit about what that year was like, what you liked about it, what was maybe different from what you thought. Just give me your general impressions and kind of what you thought about that year that you spent at Flagler.
Is Division II basketball, and the first thing I always like to say with Flagler College is try to get as much respect on Division II basketball as possible. Because, and I knew this because I went to North Georgia, they're a D2 team, but most of the public, and once you get into D2 basketball, you forget this, but most kids, most parents, I wouldn't say most coaches, but some coaches, they kind of have a distaste for Division II basketball, but it is an amazing level of basketball. The coaching is amazing. Obviously, the talent and the height and the athleticism isn't quite D1, but the skill level, a lot of the players, is exactly D1 level. It's just they're smaller or maybe slower, but Coach Warner, he can coach with any Division I coach, any Division II coach, any coach in the country, you name, he can coach with them. So coaching is great. The one thing I think I underestimated when I got there was recruiting. Like, obviously, I know that's important, but I just have a natural tendency for kind of technology sides like video and graphics and even some like player development stuff is kind of where I tend to go towards naturally. I would get out and recruit, but I didn't realize – that's got to be the absolute number one priority. And I just didn't realize that. So that was probably where I would say I fell short maybe. So if you're like me, and I don't know if ever's listened to this, if you're like me and you want to jump to college, have all those skills, have all those technical skills and video skills and whatever else, but make sure you have, and I was trying to build my recruiting network even before I got into college coaching. So I was like just building connections and relationships with travel ball coaches, high school coaches, stuff like that, doing that with like intentionally so that when I did get to college, I could have kind of a recruiting network to tap into. But I really underestimated like that's got to be priority number one and number two and number three. And then everything else comes after that. Peach Belt Conference. So it's teams like North Georgia where I went, Flagler, some teams in South Carolina, North Carolina, really, really good basketball. And if you're a player and you happen to be listening to this, you're not getting D1 looks, man. All these kids transfer from D1 schools anyway, so that shows you these situations aren't perfect and they're not ideal. I think the level of basketball has 1, maybe 0.5%
of the satisfaction of a college playing career, but what has more to do with it is how many minutes you get, the quality of the relationships on your team, and the kind of social life that you experience at the college. And the level's got nothing to do with that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it comes down to finding the right fit. And
yeah,
too often you see that Division I or bust mentality where people don't even want to entertain the idea of attending a Division II or Division III school until it's like the absolute last resort. And to a certain degree, I understand that. I tell people the story that when I was 18 and I thought I was a Division I player, and the only Division I offer that I had in hand was the one that I ended up taking. And I had lots of Division III schools. Here in Ohio, there really isn't much D2 basketball.
Right.
But a lot of Division IIIs wanted me to come there. And of course, I was sort of that same mindset that we just described, where I talked to him, I was polite, but I knew in the back of my head that I wanted to go and play Division I. And for me, it ended up working out. And I ended up in the right place with a coach that appreciated the skills that I had. But it could have very easily gone a different direction. Because obviously there were a lot of people that thought that I was a borderline Division I player, since there weren't a lot of people beating down my door to offer me a scholarship. But I guess for me, it made sense for me to go and give it a try. And so I would have a hard time telling a kid, hey, you've got one offer from the Big Ten and then everything else is a mid-major. Don't take that Big Ten offer because, hey, you probably can't make it. If you think you can make, hey, somebody's got to have confidence in you. So go and give it a shot. And yet at the same time, I think what happens is that what gets dangerous at times for kids is that they end up eliminating all these other options. And they blow off these coaches, or they say, forget that. I think this other thing is coming. And then those other offers from higher level schools never come. Or they just pick that higher level without having any idea of what they're getting into. I had a pretty good idea of what I was getting into. And so I knew the coaching staff. I had met with them multiple times. And I had a good idea of who the players were in the program and where I would fit and whether or not I'd have a chance to play. And I think so many people don't really understand what the level of play is. I'm always amazed. Like, we've had a bunch of Division III coaches on here, Mason, who have said to us that the number of people that they sit in their living room with the player and the parent, and they'll be talking about the level of play at Division III and how good it is. And the parents be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then the coach will say, have you ever been to a Division III basketball game? Have you ever gone and watched a Division III basketball game? And they're like, 75% of the time, the answer is no.
Yeah.
And yet they're, those people will just be like, they're blowing off those coaches. And it's a shame because, like I said, I think it's more important to find the right fit than it is to necessarily play at the highest level.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw that at the D2 level, that people were telling you, oh, come on, I'm going to be getting those D1 offers. I don't want to waste my time, trying to go D2.
Yeah, a lot of kids think that. But I think it's the job, like us as coaches, it's tricky to navigate, because we always, parents and teachers and coaches, we're always telling the kids, aim for the highest level, not just in basketball, but just in life. It's kind of that American lesson of aim for the stars, shoot for the highest level of achievement, stuff like that. And sometimes kids can get, it's hard to navigate when you're talking, whether it be basketball or football, whatever sport it is playing in college. Yeah, you want to aim for the highest level of achievement, highest level of your sport, because all these kids are naturally competitive and they're ambitious, which is fine and good. But at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, that's one part of it, but another part of it too is these other things that you need to think about. And so I just think as coaches, we can overall as a community do a, and I try to talk about it whenever I can, just promoting, especially Division II basketball, since I coach there. Like, it's really good basketball. It's a lot of fun, great competitive games, really, really good players, good coaching, full scholarships where college is fully paid for, a lot of beautiful colleges, beautiful campuses. It's just that they're not on TV and don't get the media coverage is why I think that it's kind of disrespected on average when you're talking to your average parent or average high school player.
I agree. And yet, at the same time, if you think about the recruiting process today compared to the recruiting process when I was being recruited 30 some odd years ago, there's so much more information out there that's easier to get your hands on to find out more about the program, the coach, the academics at the school, the social environment. I feel like in a lot of ways, back 30 years ago, you were kind of flying blind. Now, not to say that you couldn't have done your research, but it was certainly more much harder. Yeah, many more obstacles. Whereas today, you can find out an awful lot about a coach and his program or her program, and you can find out about the school and the academics and just the kind of environment that it is. And that, I think, allows kids to make hopefully better decisions if they have the right people in their ear and they're getting guidance from the right people helping them to make that decision. And that sometimes is a challenge as well.
Yeah. And what I like to tell parents and kids is if when you're looking at programs, look at the roster from year to year. Are kids staying 4 and 5 years? If they are, that's a good sign because they're not leaving. And that means the coach has done a good job of recruiting good fits and guys or gals who are going to get an opportunity to play. So that's a good sign. But if they're, you know, if you're looking at the roster and you hit the drop down box on the school website and every year there's 9, 10 new players, probably not going to be a great opportunity since people aren't staying very long. So maybe not a great fit. And then another thing I like to tell parents and kids is try to reach out to the current players and the former players. That's another great way because a player's going to give you the best opinion of a program and of a coach. And of course, like, we all have that one kid or two kids who doesn't like us as a coach. So you don't just want to ask one player because you might get the one with the worst attitude. But coach or parents and players, recruits, I think a good thing to do is ask the current players, find some former players who just graduated a year or two ago and just get multiple perspectives on that program. And that's always a good way, too, to get perspective on who they're getting recruited by.
Absolutely. I think that's great advice for anybody who's considering playing college basketball to do your homework. And when you do your homework, you're much more likely to end up with a positive outcome. So let's talk about your transition then from college back to high school. And then I want to get to the great things that you're doing with your digital stuff. So just talk to me a little bit about how your time ended at Flagler and then moving back to the high school level.
Yeah, so towards the end of the season, I think I was going to, well, financially, so it was like the pay was not amazing. as we all know, teachers aren't millionaires.
That was a nice way to say it.
Yeah. As we know, teachers aren't millionaires, but I think I've quadrupled or whatever the word for five times is what I get paid as a first-year teacher here in Georgia. So I knew financially it was not going to be long-term. But so as I was transitioning out of Flagler, there was like a 1 or 2 month period where I knew I wanted to stay in college coaching, and the pursuit of my next spot and just coaching for the last 4, 5, 6 years, it was like 24/7. I was always doing something Monday to Sunday, whether it was film or reaching out or making workouts or something, and I loved it and I really enjoyed it. Well, talking with my mom, talking with my then girlfriend who's now my fiance, kind of just talking like I want to coach college. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do. But for now, I think I'm gonna humble myself. I really read a Bible verse and it was like talked about humility and humbling ourselves. So I was like, you know what? I need to humble myself because I don't want to be someone who is just always constantly thinking about their job all the time, even though I enjoyed it and I liked it. I just didn't. It's like I've never wanted to be that person. So I'm going to take a step back for a year and then just see what happens. But even before that, I was still talking to a couple different schools. I made a analytics report for Tom Crean at Georgia. I spent like probably 30 to 40. So I went out to Athens. I went up to him and I heard that their video job was open. Shook his hand. I was like, hey, I'm interested in the job. And he said, who are you? What's your name? How'd you get in here? Well, then I talked to him a couple more minutes. And I actually got John Shulman to text the assistant for me too. So I was going after that, going after a couple other jobs. Put together this huge analytics report for Georgia and talking to a couple other schools, different levels, D3, D2, D1. But then I decided, I was like, you know what, I think I'm going to go to the high school level this year. Felt it was right, talked to family, and And then I got hired as a teacher like a week before school started because I made that decision so late.
Nice work.
so I got lucky and got on at a great school. That's kind of the decision-making process and the journey over the last year or so, going from college back to high school. And I also, one other thing is, and I've got it going right now, actually. I've had some business ideas in my head for
probably 2 years, and I was thinking, when I'm older, I want to make sure I tried these because I'm really interested in it. And naturally, I'm very independent. Naturally, if there's, like, I struggle having bosses because I'm like, if there's something I don't want to do, you're going to have to really convince me to do it. I'm not one who just takes instructions. You got to, like, I got to have some conviction in doing it, which I'm sure I know working for different people, that's annoyed them at different times, but I'm like, I'll still be productive. I just want to do my own thing. So right. Anyway, with some business ideas, I've been pursuing those and trying to get that off the ground here over the last couple months. And it's just stuff that serves coaches and players, and I'm just kind of seeing where it goes.
All right, well, let's go right to that. Tell people what it is that you're doing. Tell people about what you're hoping to do, where you want to go with it, some of the things that you have out there for coaches. Just lay out the business proposition for us. Tell us what you have going on so that people who are out there can support you.
Yeah, it's drill books, it's instructional stuff. The one I'll start with the most unique thing I think I'm doing, which is a way to increase summer camp profit. So helping programs and coaches make more money through their camps at absolutely zero cost to them. So all it is very simple, nothing new as far as the skill instructional videos that I'm making, just videos on shooting and ball handling, all that kind of stuff that everybody's already seen, but I'm marketing it through high school camps, junior college camps, guys and girls. And basically what I'm doing is the coaches who host the camp, they will promote my videos to their kids. And then when the kids buy it, the kids, and I really think it's going to be a good videos for the kids. Like, they'll get better as players. They'll learn drills, techniques, and shooting, all that kind of stuff. And then the sales that go through the camps, I got to work out the exact finances, but I want to give over 50% of every sale right back into that high school program, right back into that college program in order to help them make more money too. And it's not like a thing where I take 99% and they take 1%. I want to give each program a majority of that sale so that they can increase their profit through their summer camp. Because I know, being a high school coach, coaching college and hardly making any money, I know sometimes that, you know, a couple hundred extra $100, or I'm hoping some camps will get a couple extra $1,000 depending on how many kids they have, but I know that can go a long way. And it's so easy because I'm going to make all the promotional materials, like posters and videos and stuff. So really all coaches are going to have to do is just hand out posters or show a video of my videos or something, send out an email, then that's all they have to do. And then every purchase, I'll funnel some profit back into each camp. But then beyond that, selling my whole business kind of idea is to provide so much value to coaches to make them think, oh, why is he only selling this for, you know, this much? He should be selling it. Or make a coach think, holy moly, Mason has given me so many free workouts, so many drills. He's given me his best stuff for free. Yeah, I'll pay $10-$15 for this other new drill book he's selling that's bigger and larger than the stuff he's given me. So nothing, just skill development stuff, drills, things like that, typical coaching resources.
It's good stuff. I think that what I hear you saying is something that I read about all the time because I'm always interested in entrepreneurship and being my own boss and doing some of those same things. And you always hear that you should be providing more value than what you're charging. And
yeah.
When you're providing more value to people than what you're charging, whether that's $2 or whether that's $2,000, people are happy to pay it because they're getting more value out of it than what they're putting in. And I think that really is the key to being successful in anything that you do. Where do you see that going long term? How do you see that continuing to grow? You have thoughts of maybe being able to do that full time at some point if things break right and if you continue to hit on the right things, or do you always see yourself in the coaching at the team level too, and this just being more of a, I don't want to say a complete sideline, because you certainly could be doing it full time while you're coaching as well. But I get it, man. Podcasting is sort of the same idea.
Yeah. Well, the battle for me, and I'd imagine you have the same thing, is first and foremost, I'm a coach. I've always wanted to coach. I've coached for, you know, since I was 17, training when I was 17 and then teams when I was 18. So I'm a coach first and foremost. So I've always kind of have to advocate for myself because I've been called a clinic guy. I've been called a social media guy. I've been called a Twitter guy, which I am very active on Twitter. But
first and foremost, behind all that, I'm a real coach, you know, at a real high school, real college, stuff like that. So for, I always want to coach. I always want to be involved with coaching. The business stuff, yeah, I would like for it to go full time. The basketball stuff, I'm not super concerned about maximizing the profit, which with that camp business, that's why I like to share a lot of the profit back into it. So the basketball business, yeah, I'd like for it to go full time, but I'm not super concerned about maximizing profit because I want to stay involved in coaching, and I also want the business to be a way to network with different people. And honestly, my goal, this is the first time I've said it publicly, and it could totally fall on its face, but if it does, I don't care. But I want to make enough money with some of these business opportunities to where when and if I do want to get back into college coaching, I can go work for a program for free for a year. And kind of live off what I made before that in order to, because if you don't have money, you know, I might have to take another college coaching job of a staff that might be kind of shady or questionable or people I don't want to work with. But if I can save up enough money that I can live off for a year, then I could maybe have some more choice in working for free for a program that I admire or like. And then some other business ideas I got going that aren't involved in the basketball community that hopefully I'll be concerned more about profit with those.
Understood. You can do a lot with your computer and the internet these days. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Just the opportunity that you have to be able to do more things. And I think that that's something that you and I certainly have in common. I'm always thinking, what's the next thing? What's the next idea? What can I do to continue to add more value? And so I'm always right now tossing around this podcast network idea and thinking about putting together some more shows that are either similar to what we do for other sports or branching out into other different basketball podcasts and that kind of thing. And so as you get into it more and you get more confident in your ability to do things, then you start to see other possibilities of things that you can do to provide more value. And as we said, if you provide a lot of value to people, then eventually you can maybe turn it into a business that, if nothing else, earns you at least a little bit of money while you're having fun doing all your digital work.
Yeah, that's true. I enjoy it too. And going back to what I said a minute ago, I've just always wanted to try this stuff anyway. So I didn't want to be, you know, 10, 20 years down the road and say, oh, I had all those ideas, but I never did them.
For sure.
So, who knows? It might fail. It might succeed. You never know. But wanted to give these things a shot.
It's about the journey anyway, right? It's all about the fun.
Yeah,
we're supposed to focus on the process, not the outcome.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. Same with coaching. Like, we don't know if we'll win that game or lose that game, but give it your all.
Absolutely, no question about that. All right, we're coming up on about an hour and 15 minutes or so.
Okay, and so we're just getting started. No, I'm kidding.
I want to give you a chance, Mason, before we wrap things up, to share all the ways that people can reach out to you and find you so that they can learn about what you're doing, so they can find the things that you were mentioning here from a digital standpoint. Just tell people how they can find you and reach out to you, and then I'll jump back on, wrap up the episode. And if there's anything that we didn't touch on tonight that you want to share kind of as your parting shot, you can go ahead and do that as well.
Okay. I'm on all social platforms. Twitter at @MasonWaters_ is my main one, and I try to share a lot of stuff on there. And then I've got a newsletter. So if you go to my Twitter @MasonWaters_, the pinned tweet is a link to my newsletter. So I've got, getting up to a couple thousand coaches on that. And if you sign up for that, I got some ball screen workouts, shooting drills, all that stuff. If you join, you can join the newsletter for free, get all that free stuff, and then unsubscribe. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. So at least some free stuff is on the table. And then I've got my YouTube I really use for players. I honestly haven't made a ton of videos lately, but I want to now that our season is over, and I'm not out recruiting in college like last year. I can make more videos for players, but those are film sessions, video breakdowns, skill breakdowns, stuff like that. And that's just youtube.com/MasonWaters. And then my email is coachmasonwaters@gmail.com. And usually respond to all those. I've got an Instagram, but not super active on that. But those are my main Twitter, newsletter, email, YouTube are my main ones I'm focused on now.
Got it. All right. I lied. I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
In a week, how much time are you spending putting together all the internet, digital, video, newsletter stuff? How much time do you spend in a week doing that?
Ooh.
a lot. It's kind of so during the season, obviously with games and practices and stuff, it was less during the season. But ever since the season's over and before the season, probably 30 or more hours a week, if not more.
Sounds about right. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So it takes a while. And sometimes it's scary because I'll put together something I'll sell. Like the free stuff I make doesn't take long, might take a couple hours. But when I'm making these big drill books, I'm making them and it takes, 40, 50 hours over the course of a month to make it. And I'm like, man, I hope people buy this. But that's part of coaching. Like you prepare for the game, hope you win. Same thing with business. Make something, absolutely. Hope people buy it.
Absolutely. No question about that, Mason. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. We really appreciate it. It's been great getting to learn about A, your basketball journey, and then B, some of the great things that you're doing. And I'm sure you're going to continue to put out great material. If you don't subscribe to Mason's newsletter, make sure you do that. Make sure you check him out on all the social media platforms. As he said, he's just got a ton of free resources that you can take advantage of. And then hopefully you'll throw him 10 or 15 bucks for some of the other things that he's doing and help him get this business off the ground, because I think he's going to do great things moving forward. So Mason, thanks so much for joining us on the Hoopheads podcast. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Head Start Basketball.